I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Corrupt and contented. That's how Lincoln Steffens famously described Philadelphia at the start of the 20th century. Government officials decided to change the city's reputation a century later after pay-to-play scandals by limiting contributions to candidates running for city offices. The three leading mayoral contenders this spring, James Kenney, Anthony Hardy Williams, and Lynn Abraham, have each raised about $1 million under these regulations. Those contributions, though, are dwarfed by the $9 million raised by independent expenditure groups. American Cities, that supports Williams, raised more than $6.5 million this year with money from the Susquehanna Group, that's a trading firm in suburban Philadelphia. Building a Better Pennsylvania and Forward Philadelphia, that supports Kenney, has raised more than $2 million, mostly from unions. Well, here to talk about money and the mayor's race is Dave Davies, senior reporter for WHYY's NewsWorks. He also authors the Off Mic blog. And Dave, always a pleasure. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good to come down the hall and see you.
Exactly. We like that when people are so close. And Patrick Kirkstra is with us as well, deputy editor at Philadelphia Magazine, where he is editor of their Citified blog. And Patrick, always a pleasure. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks
as well.
Thanks for having me.
We're talking about this because on Friday, Dave, there was a deadline. These were reporting requirements, I guess, for the candidates. Anything that you learned Friday that you didn't know on Thursday?
Well, we learned a little bit more about who's actually funding the super PACs that are funding Jim Kenney, and they are unions. I mean, it is building trades unions, and it is public employee unions, and details here and there. I mean, it was pretty clear just from following the media buys in this race that this was a race, unlike any other in the history of the city, in which the candidates themselves were raising and spending less money than these independent expenditure groups. I think it's fair to call them super PACs. They're, you know, created by the Supreme Court decisions of Citizens United and another one called Speech Now, which essentially allowed anybody who was willing to raise and spend money for an independent expenditure could openly advocate the election of a candidate and take any check, no matter how big, and spend whatever they wanted, provided they didn't coordinate with the candidate. So that created this phenomenon we've never seen before, yeah. And it came on in a huge way. I mean, when you looked at the numbers, the super PACs spent more than twice as much as all the candidates combined. And as Patrick knows, and we've been writing, one of them, this group that you mentioned before, the three partners in the Susquehanna International firm, the trading firm, they accounted for more than half the spending of all of it. I mean, they were the Godzilla of spending in this race. Don't know that it's going to get their guy in the mayor's office, but it has been an enormous amount of money.
Do you think in some ways, Patrick, it's the sort of unintended consequences of the regulations that were put in back in the 2000s?
Well, I mean, not really. I mean, it's a consequence of, U.S. Supreme Court rulings that enabled independent organizations to spend as much as they want on a race. The limits still apply. The very strict limits still apply within Philadelphia to the candidate committees. David had an interesting story today about how those have, largely done their job, and they've largely done solved the problem that they were designed to solve. What, the creators of those laws didn't anticipate is the federal Supreme Court rulings that have enabled these mega super PACs to go into local elections. I mean, I think everybody knew initially that there would be a big impact at the national level,
sure,
even at the state level,
sure.
But this kind of money, in a municipal election, I mean, to pick a mayor and even city council candidates is, not something that certainly anybody was anticipating back, 15 years ago when the campaign finance law was getting drawn.
There is one little caveat to that, not to overcomplicate this, but when the city's campaign finance limits were enacted in 2003, everybody who looked at it then said there was one glaring loophole, and that was, and this was even before Citizens United, that it didn't prohibit any other political committee in the state from spending what it wanted to specifically advocate the election of a city candidate, like a mayoral candidate. So, for example, Vince Fumo, he is no longer a power, but in his day controlled a ton of money. There was nothing in the city law that prevented him from deciding to go in and advocate very strongly for another candidate. So even without Citizens United, we would have an issue here.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it is clear that you know, when people are allowed to raise and spend whatever they want, it complicates things.
Well, and I do want to get to how you think it complicates things, but let me go back to you, Dave, because you had an interesting piece in your blog today looking at who wasn't and who hasn't or didn't contribute or create a PAC or a super PAC. Unlike the unions, you looked at law firms, other firms that had been players in the past, not so today.
It really is fascinating because if you turn the calendar back a couple of decades – the people that wrote big checks in mayoral campaigns, some were certainly unions, but big law firms, big title insurance firms, insurance brokers, and developers could write $50,000, $75,000 checks. In 2007, we had an election with limits, and nobody was sure it was really going to apply, and so the special interest didn't jump in, and the candidates had to raise what they could raise within the limits. And now we have an election where the super PAC phenomenon allows you to get back in the game if you want to. If you're prepared to either form a super PAC or contribute to a super PAC, you can write the $50,000 checks again. And what's fascinating when you look at those reports Friday is that the unions came to play and the others didn't. No big law firms, no developers, no big insurance companies. They, with one a tiny exception here and there, they stayed out of it.
Is it hard to form a super PAC or a PAC? I mean, how do you understand that, Patrick?
Well, it's a big deal. I mean, as Dave wrote today and we've written about before, I mean, you're essentially forming like a separate campaign operation. You know, you need strategists, you need a media firm, you need to make all those same sorts of tactical and strategic decisions that an actual candidate campaign would. And you know, you've got to run it. And you know, these guys are used to writing large checks and, you know, perhaps counting on that to get them some influence. But the whole idea of running a campaign operation, I mean, that's not anything that they want to do, that they know how to do.
Now, of course, you could decide to simply contribute to one of the political committees that's backing one of your candidates, because they were out there. But we didn't see them do it.
That's interesting.
And one theory that I threw out is that maybe they're just as happy not having to write these big checks. And in the old days, when the candidate called you up and called the – pick a law firm named Ballard Spahr and says, I need a you – know, we'd appreciate your support. And Ballard, blah, blah, blah. And then it gets around. And then the candidate says, well, you know, Dilworth Paxson's in for $50,000.
Yeah.
So Ballard says, all right, do I really want to stay out of the club? I mean, I'm picking these names out of the air. These are not – but they're potential big players. And so it was hard to say no to a candidate because you just want the influence that comes with that. Remember that now it is illegal for a candidate to ask you to write a check to a super PAC. That would be coordination. They can't do that. So while if you're a big firm that might want some influence, you look around and you say, well, I could contribute, but the candidate's not asking me.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Maybe I just don't.
Well, and these IEs, I mean, these super PACs, I mean, they have sort of agendas of their
own. Independent expenditure groups.
Yeah, sorry.
I need to make sure our listeners stay with us as we talk about campaign money. But yes, go ahead.
These independent expenditure groups, I mean, they have sort of agendas of their own. And I don't know if, you know, you're a big downtown business interest and say you want Jim Kenney for one reason or another. I don't know that you want to write a big check to, you know, an IE group and an independent expenditure group that's run, you know, basically by John Dougherty or other union players. I don't know that that's something that, you know, you'd feel comfortable with.
The other interesting thing, I think Patrick had a really insightful comment a few weeks ago when he talked about one of the things that's not good about having super PACs be such a force in elections is that they have no reputation to protect. Building a better PA, you can't even get them on the telephone. I mean, they just don't respond. They are whatever they are. They're actually a coalition of unions. But, you know, if they do something that turns up seems to be a low blow or is misleading or inaccurate, whose reputation gets hurt? And the interesting exception in this case is American Cities, the one run by the three Susquehanna International Group investors that you referred to, Marty, who have raised about $9 million. I just can't say that enough in a single Philadelphia raise.
And this goes back to 2014, 2015.
Right.
The 2 years together.
That's right. 2 years together. Is it over nine or is it over eight? I don't want to get this wrong.
I put 6.5 for this year. But
it's over eight.
Okay.
It's over 8 million. Okay. Thanks. Okay. I'm overstating it by a million. But I think they are very concerned about their reputations. And as you and I have written, Patrick, I mean, I think the one thing that they could really do to be a game changer in this election would be to run negative ads against Jim Kenney, who I think most folks believe is ahead. We can talk about why we think that. But they won't They don't do it, and I think it's partly because they don't want to be seen as the heavies. They don't want their pictures in the paper, and they don't want what's going to happen in response, which is that the Kennedy campaign and its super PACs will make them the issue.
Well, and what I read over the weekend, Patrick, is that they have almost $1 million willing to spend, I guess, in the next week of the campaign. I mean, $1 million in a week. I mean, TV stations must just be jumping for joy.
They must. I wonder how viewers are going to feel about it, though. I mean, it's a carpet bombing. I mean, it's a lot of airtime. And I think, you know, you might find that it kind of hits up against the ceiling of effectiveness. I mean, there's a certain point where people
wonders, doesn't?
Yeah, people begin to tune out a little bit, and you know, you wonder with that kind of money and that compressed a time, especially if it's more sort of, you know, the same sort of biographical mm-hmm. or positive spots that we've seen already from them for 6 weeks here. You know, whether it'll make a difference, you know, with 8 days to go.
Yeah, nobody who watches Jeopardy or the morning talk shows has not seen one of their ads.
Right.
Whether they like it or not. But let me ask you, Dave, because you interviewed, I guess, one of the men who runs this group, the Susquehanna Group, again, a trading firm in suburban Philadelphia in Bala Cynwyd. Why have they invested in Williams? They invested in his governor campaign a couple of years ago. Why him?
Well, it's a controversial subject, and there are a lot of people who will tell you that these guys are, you know, kind of right-wing conservative libertarians who have an agenda of privatizing public education. And what they say is that they've made a lot of money, and they want to do something good, and what they see the best use of their philanthropic efforts is to help kids, as they say, trapped in violent, failing schools. And for them, that's charters, it's government vouchers to help them get into private and religious schools. I mean, I personally don't think that they are in this for personal gain. Mm-hmm. And whether they're all libertarians, I'm not so sure. One of them is on the board of the Cato Institute, which has a wide-ranging libertarian agenda. The other two, you know, don't talk that much about it. But I think they genuinely are committed to what they're doing. And they have decided that Senator Williams is the vehicle. They, as you know.
Well, he's a track record on these issues.
He certainly was. He has been a vocal supporter of charters and vouchers in the state legislature. And they put over $5 million into his gubernatorial campaign, and it looks like they're going to top that again.
Yeah, I mean, I largely agree. I mean, I think that they're true believers on this question, and I think that, you know, in Williams, you know, Williams is if this is your agenda and this is something that you believe strongly in, Williams is probably a good person to back. He's the highest profile Democrat, pro-school choice Democrat in the entire state. You know, he went into this race as a favorite, arguably. For a lot of reasons, that has a lot of support, a lot of institutional support. If you believe, as these guys I think really do, that you know, school choice is a paramount civil rights issue, that's the way they talk about it, it's a civil rights issue, then, you know, getting a mayor of Philadelphia who believes those same things is a pretty good accomplishment.
Let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Patrick Kirkstra, deputy editor, of Philadelphia Magazine, editor of their Citified blog. Also with us, Dave Davies, senior reporter for WHYY's Newsworks, author of the Off-Mic blog. We are talking about money and the mayor's race here in Philadelphia. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We are talking about money and politics and the mayor's race here in Philadelphia with our guests Dave Davies and Patrick Kirkstra. And to join our conversation, send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And in a bit, we'll be taking some phone calls. The candidates running for mayor of Philadelphia have gone to something like, I don't know, 40, 50, 60, maybe 70 forums. And we would love to know if you went to a forum, what you learned from the forum, and if you think that's a good way for the candidates to mix it up with the voters. So we want to have you weigh in on that as well. Patrick, you were talking about American cities and both you and Dave and their interest in school choice and even looking at this as a civil rights issue. We had all the candidates on Radio Times, including Anthony Hardy Williams. And what was so interesting when I asked him about this is he sort of was trying to back himself away from the idea of school choice and vouchers and his legacy in the Senate.
Yeah, it's been an interesting sort of character feature of the race. I mean, he's far and away, you know, the highest profile Democrat who believes in school choice in the state. He ran for governor on that platform. His biggest legislative accomplishments have all been sort of around this question, or a lot of his legislative activity has been around this question. And, you know, I think it's fair to say that, you know, in his mayoral run, he's downplayed that a little bit. I mean, school choice is a very controversial question, obviously. I mean, there are very, very strong feelings all the way around. And it seems as though, you know, the Williams campaign made a decision that they were better off sort of downplaying those beliefs than running on them. And I wonder if that was the right call. I mean, Harold Jackson, I think, quite had a devastating editorial, I thought, or a column about this the other day. And, you know, the thing is that Williams is sort of at his best when he's talking about school choice because it's the issue that animates him the most.
He believes in it, doesn't he?
Exactly. And that comes across most on that issue. And since he's talking about it less than I think a lot of us expected him to, you're getting fewer of those moments where he's at his best.
How do you see it, Dave? And let me just throw in a Facebook comment from Diana. She says, I understand the amounts of money, but for the three people at Susquehanna behind American Cities, why are they so interested in who is Philadelphia's next mayor? What is their agenda? Do we know? You touched on that just a little bit earlier, but anything you want to add?
Well, yeah, and I do want to correct a mistake I made a moment ago. I said that they'd raise over –
meaning American Cities.
Yeah, this is the super PAC that's supporting Williams, supported by the three rich guys from the suburbs. I'd said they raised over $8 million. It's over $7 million. I'm sorry. I get these numbers can be. I don't want to attribute more than they are. It's over $7 million, which is it speaks for itself. It is an interesting question why they would put, because by now we'll be $12 million of their own money between the two Williams campaigns supporting this man. And I, you know, the mayor has influence over the schools, but it's only a part of what the mayor does. And the mayor appoints only two of the five members of the body that runs the schools, the School Reform Commission. A Democratic governor, not so friendly to school choice, right, appoints the other three. So one wonders if it's going to make the difference that they would hope. But I think they're completely committed to it. And the phenomenon Patrick was talking about is interesting. And I assume that Anthony Williams, like all the other candidates, know that there are a lot of divergent opinions about what we need to make schools work better, and there are people who support public schools and are troubled by, you know, vouchers and charters, and he doesn't want to alienate them because they probably correspond to part of his voting base. And so they've all ended up saying kind of the same thing, which is we want schools that work, and it doesn't distinguish them.
Yeah, and schools obviously a very big issue in this mayor's race. We've talked a little bit, Patrick, about the unions. We haven't talked specifically about Johnny Dock, as he's known here in Philadelphia. What should we know about him? And also the unions, looks like they have pretty much lined up behind Jim Kinney.
Yeah, it's not 100% union support for Kinney. Williams has some important union backers, which we should maybe talk about later.
Yes.
For the most part, the public employee unions, the teachers unions, John Dougherty, part of the building trades, is behind Jim Kinney. He's probably, you know, the union candidate, certainly in this election. I think that's fair to say. In terms of Doc's involvement, you know, he has a complicated personal history with Jim Kinney. And I think it's fair to ask, you know, what sort of influence John Dougherty might have on a Jim Kinney administration, not just because of the sort of financial support that the super PACs are giving, the union super PACs are giving the Kinney campaign, but because of the sort of political juice that Dougherty has in this town. And the need a future Mayor Kinney might have to draw on that juice pretty often.
It's a fascinating thing. You know, for people who don't follow this closely, I mean, John Dougherty, his union, Electricians Local 98, which, by the way, represents our engineers here at WHYY.
Absolutely.
Very, very small part of what they do. But, I mean, that union raises and spends $2 million a year. It is by far the biggest spending political action committee in the state, and he has enormous influence because of that. He also, as Patrick says, has this personal relationship with Kinney. They grew up in the same neighborhood together. They went to St. Joseph's Preps together. They were allies when Kinney was with State Senator Vince Fumo, and then they were bitter, bitter enemies when those officials had a rift, and now they've kind of reunited. So it is a fascinating kind of political and personal story. And the thing that Patrick mentioned about Doherty's reach throughout the city is something that does concern a lot of people. I've heard a lot of people say John Doherty controls city council. I don't know that that's exactly true, but he's certain two of the former union political directors are members of council, and he spends a lot of money there. And I also will note that you can look the other way. Doherty was in favor of the sale of PGW, was not able to convince the council president to even bring that to a hearing. So I don't think he controls council, but he has a lot of influence there. His brother, Kevin Doherty, is a very credible candidate for state Supreme Court. That's, in fact, John Doherty's biggest priority this year. And so some people say that's too much. If you have a guy with that much influence on council, potentially his brother on the state's highest court, you don't need to give that guy a seat in the mayor's office.
Oh, fascinating. Well, let's get even deeper into the weeds here. This has to do with the Carpenters Union. And Patrick, as I understand it, the local Carpenters Union has been supportive of Williams. But then out of these filings that came out on Friday, it looks like a different Carpenters Union has been supportive of Kenny. This is something, Dave, you wrote about. Anything you want to weigh in on when it comes to that, Patrick and then Dave?
There's some questions that need unraveling here. I think it's fair to say. I mean, 700,000, was that the figure?
$725,000 essentially.
$725,000 from a Jersey Carpenters pack that is going to Jim Kenny, who is opposed locally by the local Carpenters, Ed Coryell, who is backing Williams. And this being Philadelphia, it gets even deeper than that. Of course, I mean, there's one of the questions here is John Doherty and Ed Coryell, who are feuding in huge ways over the convention center, the Carpenters having been kicked out of the convention center for a long history of making things a little bit difficult there. So, now there's the potential there's a hearing on whether or not the Carpenters could get back in to the convention center, and questions are raised. Who are the Carpenters really behind? Is there a rift in the Carpenters themselves? I don't think we have the answers yet.
Yeah. And then we throw in this money, Dave, on top of it. Right?
Yeah, Ed Coryell doesn't talk. I've talked to him once in my years here. He generally doesn't talk to reporters. And you're right. I mean, the backdrop here is this huge controversy about the convention center, where it was believed that the Carpenters were among the trades there who made it hardest for them to get shows because they wouldn't let people set up their own booths. And so we were going to have a new deal, a new more friendly customer agreement. The Carpenters didn't sign, so they were left out. So they're furious, and they disrupted the auto show. And they backed Williams. And then we see these two contributions, I think April 1st and then May.
April 4th, I'm reading your report, Dave.
Okay, thank you.
And May 1st, to the Turnout Project.
Right, so this mysterious brand-new committee in Washington, and that goes to this committee supporting Kenny. In other words, so two ways of looking at this. One, the International Carpenters Union, and people within the building trades have told me this, the International Carpenters Union is frustrated with what they call the juvenile behavior of Ed Coryell, the local guy, with respect to the convention center. And by the way, his son works at the convention center, and that's one of the reasons people believe he's so personally invested. Isn't this a great town?
It's a wonderful little town, yes.
So when I called the spokesman for Coryell on Friday, he said, I don't think that's true. And then he sent me a statement from a vice president of an Eastern Council of Carpenters somewhere. I don't know who this person is. I don't know who they speak for. I didn't get any further information. So one theory is the International Carpenters are sick of Coryell doing this. The other theory is the Carpenters realize that Williams is in trouble. They've backed the wrong horse. And so they're going to go to Jim Kenny and say, look, we weren't with you but look, we came in and we came in big. 700 grand is nothing small. And then the other corollary, and this is all speculation, yeah. I'm not endorsing any of this, is that Doherty, because he is spending so much on getting his brother elected to the state Supreme Court, didn't have as much money as he would like to put into the Kenny Super PAC. So he goes to the Carpenters and says, look,
is speculation, right, Dave?
I don't know if any of this is true. It's just fun to talk. It's political water cooler talk. But Doherty potentially, maybe somebody imagines, goes to the Carpenters and say, look, I have a need, you have a need. come in big with Kenny, and then I will prevail upon him once he's mayor, and we will find a way to get your people back into the convention center, and we'll make up. I have no idea which of any of these theories is true, but it is very, very – it was very, very weird on Friday to see $700,000 in Carpenter's money going to the candidate they're against.
Well, we are talking about the money trail, as it is, and the mayor's race here in Philadelphia. And that familiar voice is Dave Davies, senior reporter for WHYY's Newsworks. He writes the off-mic blog that you should read every day. Patrick Kirkstra, deputy editor at Philadelphia Magazine, editor of their Citified blog, a blog you should also read if you care about Philadelphia politics. And we are talking about the mayor's race, and we're talking about money, following this money trail, what it says about the race, what it says about city politics. And you can join the conversation, Radio Times at WHYY.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. But Patrick, would it be fair to say that the candidates, we've really talked about the three leading ones, there are other three others as well, but with all this money sloshing in coming from these outside groups, that the candidates have sort of lost control of the race? Can we say that?
Yeah, I think to a degree you can. I think that there's been some discussion about sort of a relative lack of enthusiasm in this mayoral race, which I think is accurate. And I think that part of that is due to the fact that, you know, to some degree the candidates don't control their own fates. And those that do, like Lynn Abraham, who doesn't have any super PAC support outside, has raised, you know, a relatively paltry amount of money compared to
about a million.
Yeah,
right?
compared to the 2007 contenders. So it's they're not sort of the captains of their own ships in some respects. I think there's more to sort of the lack of enthusiasm than the race than that. But I think that's absolutely, you know, one of the factors.
In fact, as I was putting the show together, Diaz raising about $400,000. Oliver raised about $22,000. Apparently Milton Street didn't file. I didn't know you could run for mayor and not file, but that's a whole other thing. And the Republican raising about $5,000. Of course, she's unopposed. But Dave, does that tell us that the public is or isn't engaged? Is money a way to understand public engagement?
I think it's a lot of things. I think ads on television do kind of make people aware. And I think one of the things that's interesting to me about this that it didn't occur to me when it started is that it's hard for a super PAC to make a good positive ad about the candidate because they can't work with the candidate. Legally, they have to be separate. So they can't get the candidate into a studio for nine takes of the perfect message. They can't follow him around.
Right.
You know, petting dogs and kissing babies and talking to firefighters.
Or dropping daughters off at school.
Yeah, right. Just
always a good one, right?
And I do think that some of the many, you know, the millions of dollars that this PAC has put into promoting Williams, they're not ads that really connect enough. And then the other thing, this is a little technical, mm-hmm. but the FCC requires that TV stations give candidates the lowest rate they can for their ads. There is no such requirement for super PACs, and their rates are between 20% and 35% higher. So $1 million doesn't go as far from a super PAC. In fact, one media buyer told me that they give you the screw you rate that they give to movie trailers when you've got to get Godzilla advertised this weekend. So the money doesn't go as far. It isn't as effective, and so it's interesting to me. I just don't think they've been as powerful as all that money would be on another case. And I think there are other reasons that voters aren't quite as engaged.
Well, let me ask about a couple of human beings. I'll put this to you, Patrick. We've been talking mostly money here. But has Mayor Nutter weighed in on anybody? Has former Governor Ed Rendell? I'm thinking of some of the sort of well-known people in this city. Have they weighed in on the candidates that they may or may not support?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, no endorsements. Ed Rendell early on was saying nice things about Doug Oliver, which was a little bit surprising given that, you know, Doug is not generally considered to have a great shot at winning this thing. More recently, as Tony Williams has cut a negative ad attacking Kenny and sort of more surprisingly said that he would not ask Chuck Ramsey to stay on as police commissioner, one of the most popular police commissioners in the country. You've been hearing a lot from Mayor Nutter in particular. I mean, he basically called Tony Williams stupid over the Ramsey remarks. And you've seen, other folks, including Seth Williams, who's, quite supportive of Tony Williams, critiquing the Ramsey call on Twitter and stuff like that. So and Rendell and Nutter both knocked Tony around a little bit over the negative ad, saying that that was out of bounds. So yes, I mean, no formal endorsements, but I do think that, you know, some political elites in this town have been frowning, I think it's fair to say, at the Williams campaign, and certainly over the last week and a half, 2 weeks.
And I don't know if you
quietly
mentioned...
frowning?
No.
Not so quietly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nutter could hardly have been more explicit when he called Tony Williams stupid for saying he wouldn't rehire Chuck Ramsey.
Yeah, Chris Brennan has a piece today in the Inquirer. He calls it the shadow endorsement, kind of. I'm not saying I'm with you, but I'm giving you a little sunshine here.
Right, and Darrell Clark, you know, toured North Philadelphia with Kenny the other week. Right. Not an endorsement, but, you know, they look like, you know, Mormon missionaries, like with the shirt sleeves rolled up. I mean, white shirts, right? I mean, like, you know, it was as close to an endorsement as
you
could get.
Very funny, too, because one of our producers, Shai Ben-Yakov, was following along and asked Darrell Clark, hey, you mind? I'm just going to tag along. Is that okay with you? And he said, actually, it's kind of not.
Oh.
He wouldn't let them follow them into a PHA project where they were going to go around shaking hands. Mm-hmm. I think Clark was a little uncomfortable with
Kenny?
Getting into the race, you know, as much as he did. He agreed to do it, and Kenny got what he wanted, and Patrick's absolutely right. I mean, it's another prominent African-American elected official that you're sharing some warmth with, as did, you know, those five fairly well-known elected officials in Northwest Philadelphia that endorsed Kenny earlier. All good stuff for him.
Well, let's take another short break. It looks like a bunch of people want to join our conversation, and we've been talking about money in the mayor's race here in Philadelphia. That very familiar voice, Dave Davies, senior reporter for WHYY's Newsworks, and you can read his off-mic blog at Newsworks. And also with us is Patrick Kirkstra, deputy editor at Philadelphia Magazine, editor of their Citified blog, and you can obviously read their blog as well, especially if you're interested in Philadelphia politics. We're going to take a very short break. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can post a comment on our Facebook page as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowing, talking with Dave Davies and Patrick Kirkstra about campaign contributions, candidates, implications for the mayor's race here in Philadelphia. I should say the primary is next Tuesday on the 19th, and we've been covering a lot of mayor and election-related issues here at WHYY. Let me get Leonard from West Philadelphia to join our conversation. Leonard, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I've always thought of myself as being really politically astute and observant, but I have to admit that when the campaigning started, I had no idea who to vote for. And I've been to two of the forums, and I found those very illuminating, particularly the one that we had at Temple on Equitable Development.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really interesting to see, well, first of all, Lynn Abraham's reaction to being sort of attacked by the MOVE folks, which she handled in a really good way. But what really stood out for me was actually the fact that Anthony Williams saw fit to pick a fight with Nelson Diaz, who has, you know, almost no chance of winning. And it really, that pretty much sealed the deal for me as far as whether or not I would vote for Williams. Because it seemed like if he's, you know, willing to pick a fight with somebody that, in that situation, how would he behave as mayor when somebody has a disagreement with him who's lower standing?
So, Leonard, does that mean you have picked a candidate? And it's interesting you talk about, you know, an issue, development, but you also talked about a personality.
Yes, I think the issues, there's not a lot of room between Kenny and Williams and Doug Oliver in my book, or even Milton Street. But the personalities is really what it's going to take to run a city like Philadelphia and being able to work with people without alienating people. And definitely Williams did not strike that tone during the two forums that I happened to see him in.
Well, clearly,
really was impressed by Doug Oliver, actually. And I'm sort of vacillating between a pragmatic vote for Kenny or a sort of morals vote for Doug Oliver.
Well, that's fascinating. And Leonard, I appreciate the call into Radio Times and your willingness to sort of deliberate with us. I'm looking at you, Patrick. Any comments back to Leonard?
Well, in terms of William sort of maybe punching down there, I did notice a week ago when Helen Game was at a press conference where some activist groups had critiqued the three wealthy guys from the Burbs who were, you know, funding the big super PAC. And Helen Gim, you know, went after them a little bit. And then Williams went after Helen Gim, which was interesting, and seemed like it, you know, at best a lost day of messaging for him, and a real case of sort of punching down. This is, you know, a city council challenger, you know, he went after her for a day. So he's shown that tendency from time to time. In terms of the forums, you know, they're interesting. I mean, they're sort of double-edged swords. I mean, we've had so many. And you know, it's a great little D democracy sort of thing, and yep. That there's been a lot of airing of opinions, but the format of these things actually hasn't allowed for all that much like cross questioning. I mean, you know, perhaps that one was a little an exception rather than the rule. So they're you know, if you've been to one, you've kind of been to them all. If you've been to two, you've been to more than enough. And, you know, what they've done is they've sort of taken the candidates off the street in a way. You know, you don't have as much sort of candidate on the sidewalk, candidate at the subway platform as I think you might have in some other campaigns. Not that all candidates are cut out for or into that kind of thing. Yeah, I think that the forums have been a double-edged sword, maybe at best.
Well, I don't think we should diminish or dismiss the idea of personality. I mean, whoever is a mayor or you know, in an important office, you have to have a kind of personality to work with people. I'm looking at you, Dave Davies.
Yeah, well, you know, whenever I look at who I want for an executive office like mayor or governor, I mean, I want to know what kind of leadership traits they bring. And part of that is an ability to build relationships and maintain relationships and work with people. Part of it is hiring smart people. Part of it's having policy depth. Part of it's being a history of being absolutely ethical. And I think when you see people on their feet, unrehearsed in forums, it can give you some insights into that. But I think you also want to look carefully at what they've done and their records. I'll put in a quick plug for the election special that we're going to be doing here on WHYY, which is 11 o'clock Friday. Is that right,
yes,
Marty?
Yes, it is. I'm
taking one precious hour
yes,
away
you
from
are.
Radio Times. But one of the things that we have wanted to do in this one is to look at the leadership abilities as demonstrated by their previous actions of the mayoral candidate. So that's one thing we'll be looking at.
That's good. Leonard, thanks for the call. We have another call from West Philadelphia. This is Mark. Mark, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
Sorry, thanks for taking my call.
Oh, you're welcome.
I've grown up in Philadelphia my whole life, and it's very strong affection for this town. I've gotten the impression, and honestly, I don't follow news that carefully, but I've gotten an impression that just being aware of issues going on, especially since I have a lot of family involved in education in the school district, you know, both parents retired public school teachers here, and brother currently involved in a high school level. Obviously, I think education is the one thing that you know, affected the governor's race even powerfully, and since the city here is where we're dealing with this mess, probably the main issue that people are going to be concerned with. But I wanted to get an opinion about what, beside that, if you had to pick one or two things, were the chief things that the citizens need to kind of be concerned with. And also just to ask in light of that, perhaps, in the opinion of the guest speakers, you know, if they had a personal endorsement, they were willing to state publicly with regard to that.
Yeah, let me just say that they I can speak for our guests and myself as we do not endorse people publicly. I appreciate the question. Mark, it sounds like you're saying why education and what is it about education that's made it such an important issue in this race? Is that what you're asking?
Well, kind of mainly is like what beside education. Everybody knows that this is our kids we're talking about. There's nothing that, you know, most folks, at least in my mind, having kids myself, are going to see as more important than that since it's in such terrible shape. and the current crisis. But other things,
sure.
Among all the things we mentioned on the show, and maybe it's something like this was already stated. I just tuned in recently.
Well, you know what, Mark? Let me take your comment because there are other issues, clearly, Dave. Development being one, the kind of two cities in Philadelphia, the rich and poor. We talked about Commissioner Ramsey, but also about crime and safety.
Right. I think, you know, police policy has been talked about an awful lot. I mean, stop and frisk will. I mean, I think the debate gets a little muddy. I mean, Mayor Nutter says stop and frisk is nothing more than something that will allow a police officer to disarm a threat. It's that, but it clearly can be more if it's used more aggressively. So I think there's a debate about that. For me, I think we're in a place in the city where, you know, crime isn't the burning issue that it has been at times in the past. Education is a huge issue, but none of the candidates, it seems to me, have a very convincing hold on what we're going to do about it. I want a mayor who will be smart and independent and exercise good judgment. You just don't know what they're going to face. And I think you want one that's going to work to develop, you know, good, sustainable jobs. You want somebody who can manage a government and make departments work and deliver services efficiently. Somebody who can negotiate union contracts, which are fair to unions but fair to taxpayers. There's a lot to do there. And so you want somebody who is smart and capable and has good judgment and gets good people. And I think that's what I want. And it's not anybody's position on a particular issue. Just me that I would be looking for.
No, I hear you. Patrick, anything you want to add to that?
I've been really surprised. I mean, you know, the Philadelphia's at an interesting moment. I mean, we have, as we all know, the enormous problems, the 25% poverty rate, the schools. But there's also a real sense of optimism, I think, in much of the city. And it's not, although it's commonly sort of characterized this way, it is not just a center city phenomenon. The Pew poll from earlier this year showed that across all income levels, across all sections of the neighborhood, optimism about the direction of the city is really on the upswing. And so I've been surprised that we haven't found a candidate. There hasn't been a candidate who's really sort of projected that happy warrior, you know, theme now Philly, you know, it's we're on the rise. This is the time to like nail those problems. You know, we're on the upswing. Now we finally have what it takes to eliminate these problems that have been holding us back for so long. I haven't found that mix. It's there's been a lot of dire talk, which I think is maybe not entirely in keeping with the mood of the city. No one's really been able to tap into that optimism, with the possible exception of Doug Oliver. At, you know, a sort of lower level of support.
Abraham will at times talk about what a wonderful place it is and how much he owes so much to it. But but you're right. Once you get into the issues, it's what needs to change.
Can we can I, Dave, toss this back to you? This is something you've written about, and this is the 3.0, I guess, is it a PAC, a super PAC, a nonprofit? Dark money, what is this, and what should we know about 3.0?
It's all that and more, Marty. Just add water. Philadelphia 3.0, Philly 3.0, it's a group that sort of emerged of mysterious origin to promote a progressive agenda, particularly in city council, appealing to millennials, and it did a survey of council members and has endorsed 4 candidates. You mentioned dark money. You know, the way that a political actor can disguise or refuse to reveal its contributors is to form as a nonprofit, a 501c4 in the IRS code. Philly 3.0 both has a nonprofit arm and a political committee arm, which actually filed its report just now. Because the city ethics board takes a position. I can't say enough about how hard they are working to try and make elections clean. The city ethics board takes the position that these nonprofit social welfare organizations, you can go spend your money in the Minnesota Supreme Court race or whatever race you want to and hide your donors. But if you come to our town and you spend money to influence a Philadelphia election, we consider you a political committee and you are expected to report each of your contributors' name, date, occupation, employer, just like everybody else. And I don't think that's exactly tested yet because Philly 3.0 has the political committee which filed that. So it's kind of their status is a little unclear, but they do want to have an impact and move council in a direction, which I'll let Patrick describe.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
this is I mean, it's complicated.
A lot of people think, you know, council is sort of parochial and narrow, and they need change. And
right. I mean, sort of a couple of interesting things about Philly 3.0. So they targeted city council, not the mayor's race. Their conclusion was, and look, I mean, the
who's the they?
Who is the they? That's
who's
right.
The they?
It starts really with the Zurickis, who, you know, the father son team that owns a lot of land and a lot of parking garages in the city of Philadelphia.
Parkway Corp.
Yeah, Parkway Corp. And you know, they've been longtime sort of political actors in the city, and you know, they have attempted here to sort of rally other business interests in town. The presumption was a lot of developers would be involved to influence council. And why would they be interested in doing this with dark money? Well, because a lot of developers have business before city council, and they're worried about retribution. I mean, they don't say that, but that's clearly what this is about. So the idea is you put together a dark money operation, and then, you know, if you've got a big development project, you can contribute and try to shape council without fear that a district council member who has what we call councilmanic prerogative, basically veto power over projects, will not punish you by vetoing your project. That's the theory. In practice, it seems not to have worked out anywhere near as well. The amounts of money raised have looked to be small, or the amounts of money spent, rather, are relatively paltry. They've endorsed four city council challengers on the at-large side, on the Democratic at-large side. And, you know, those challengers have a decent shot. They're credible candidates for sure. But, you know, if they win, I don't know that it's going to be on the back of Philly 3.0.
They're also running ads promoting term limits for council members.
Right.
Interesting. Let me squeeze one more caller in. Looks like we have John from Germantown. John, we're almost out of time, but go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. I'm calling about the advocacy of unions. You mentioned a lot about unions, but unions cost the construction projects to be 35% more expensive in Philadelphia, and also inhibit the ability of teenage youth to get jobs because of union requirements, and they can't get jobs because they demand for higher wages. If we had a program where teenagers could get jobs just to learn how to work, that would be useful. And also we need somebody to advocate for sensible union wages, because Johnny Dock and the Carpenters Union in particular cost so much money that even union contractors from outside can't get it in Philadelphia.
Well, John, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. We've actually done shows about this, and we could spend a whole hour. Patrick, anything you want to say? Just a quick response to John's comment?
Yeah, I don't know if 35% is the number. I don't know offhand, but there's no question that the strength of the construction trades in Philadelphia has, you know, driven up construction costs higher than they would be otherwise. You know, the unions would tell you. That's, you know, a good thing. That you know, development here provides a living wage and then some for folks who some of whom even live in Philadelphia.
Yes, that came up on the show that we did as well. Dave, just a quick a question to you. This is picking up on the City Ethics Board. Are there calls now for more disclosure, or perhaps disclosure not so close to an election day?
Yeah, the disclosure deadlines that people follow now are the ones in the state election code, and as we've seen, they've allowed people to spend money from January 1st all the way up till Friday, May 8th, without having to disclose anything. The Ethics Board has recommended, and City Council seems willing to enact more frequent disclosure requirements, so that, you know, starting 6 weeks out from the election, and I think every 2 weeks after, everybody would have to own up to who they're raising money from and how they're spending.
Well, on that note, my thanks to the both of you for joining us today on Radio Times. I always learn a lot when I talk to Dave Davies and Patrick Kirkstra. Dave Davies, senior reporter for WHYY's Newsworks, author of the Off Mic blog. That's Mike, M-I-C. And Patrick Kirkstra, deputy editor at Philadelphia Magazine and editor of their Citified blog. And as Dave mentioned, another election special here at WHYY Friday at 11 o'clock, hosted by Dave Davies. Thanks so much for joining us. And go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program, including how to download a podcast, how to find us on Facebook, how to follow us on Twitter, how to listen to us on satellite radio. I'm Artie Moscowane. Thank you for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.